I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
The Following On podcast is proudly sponsored by Barbados Tourism. Before we kick off the show, I just wanted to take a moment to remind you that the ICC Men's Cricket T20 World Cup final is taking place in Barbados this summer. This, by default, gives all of my fellow cricket fanatics the perfect excuse to go and book a holiday to Barbados in June and experience firsthand the euphoric atmosphere at the Kensington Oval, the cricket mecca of the Caribbean. If the cricket alone isn't enough to tempt you, then let me be the one to remind you that a trip to Barbados can also include leisurely strolls along the breathtaking coastline, mouth-watering flavours of the world-class Bajan cuisine, and of course, plenty of rum. Head to visitbarbados.org/cricket today to book the trip of a lifetime to Barbados, the best place to be a cricket fan. Hello and welcome to Following On County Cricketer, a weekly podcast from TalkSport and The Cricketer magazine. I'm TalkSport's cricket editor John Norman, and every Thursday morning, joined by two-time county championship winner Steve Harmison, as well as George DeBell and Nick Friend from thecricketer.com. This week, we will be looking back at some huge stories affecting county cricket, including a potential threat from a couple of the bigger counties to create a breakaway league, a dire warning from the PCA about the cricket schedule, as well as a look at the comings and goings at Lancashire. All the while, George DeBell will be daring to dream about county success for Somerset. It's also been a week where the game has been shocked and saddened by the news coming out of Worcestershire. The thoughts of myself, George, Harmy and Nick are with the family of Josh Baker and all the Worcestershire squad after the devastating news of his passing. We also want to send our best to the Tickner family. Blair and his young wife had arrived in the UK from New Zealand just weeks ago, excited to share the summer together whilst Blair played for Derbyshire, only for his wife to get shocking news that she will have to undergo treatment for leukaemia. To compound matters, she's not allowed to journey back to New Zealand, so she'll have to undertake treatment here in the UK without the support structure in place that she would ideally be able to lean on. A Give a Little page has been set up, so please head over to givealittle.co.nz, type in Blair Tickner, and you should find the relevant page if you'd like to contribute. And to complete a sad week for our sport, the county cricketer team would also like to send their thoughts to Gloucestershire's Ben Wells, who was forced into early retirement aged just 21 after being diagnosed with AF, the same problem that led to former Leicestershire and England batter James Taylor having to step away from the game. You're listening to Following On County Cricketer. Okay, so it's me, John Norman. George DeBell's back after taking last week off. And Harmy's not with us this week, but Nick Friend is. Let's start with the big story from The Cricketer. George, you wrote a piece. It's only just gone up in the last hour or so, but by the time you listen to this show, it came out on Tuesday afternoon, and it surrounds, yes, of course, the 100. May the 10th, I think. Was that the cut-off date? When all the counties and the ECB were essentially going to be in agreement to ratify how the game is going to move forward in terms of private investment. Everybody was going to be agreeing. But not for the first time. The have-nots are angry and there seems to be some confusion and confliction. Can you bring us up to date with the story, where it is, where it's going? Could we really see a breakaway league? What's your take? It's a great story.
Hello, John. Well, firstly, I think that the chances of a breakaway are extremely slim, almost non-existent at this stage, and that it was probably something that was said in anger And I get the impression that no one is particularly keen to stand behind it at this point. Having said that, it is an expression of the frustration of the larger counties. I should, when I say that, I mean the 100 hosted counties have for the delay in the progress of the negotiations. That they wanted to get to a stage where they were in basic non-binding agreement by May the 10th, about the direction of travel. And the 11 non-hosting counties emailed Richard Gould, or actually Vikram Banerjee, at the ECB and said, "We are not in agreement." So that was one thing. Richard Gould has written back to them only in the last few hours, at midnight last night, actually, and said, which I think is relevant because it suggests that this is very important, that, it's occupying his mind, end of a bank holiday weekend, and he's up at midnight writing emails to the counties, saying, "Look, we're in danger of missing the window here. And the value of this is diminishing by the moment." So, as I understand it, a group of the hosting counties, and I think we're talking two or three of them, have mooted the breakaway as a threat, I think. Just to remind the smaller counties where the balance of power is. And I think they've probably overstepped. I think they have probably, overplayed their hand. We can all see a scenario, I suppose, where there are eight teams in all formats. But the legal challenges, the financial challenges, the structural challenges, these are significant. So where does that all lead us? It leave us? It leaves us in this situation where there is not agreement among the counties to progress the sale of the 100 teams. We are not there, and it seems that 15 votes are required. That is 75%, and 75% to 19, if we include the MCC, is 14.25. So 14 wouldn't be enough. Yeah, I hope that's clear. So the ECB need 15 votes to do whatever they're going to do, and they're nowhere near at the moment. All I would say is, having seen all the back and forth between them, is there's not a huge amount of disagreement about the fact that the counties are going to sell stakes in these teams. That is not the problem. It's not a sort of fundamental philosophical argument. It is mainly about money and the distribution of that money. And I would say that the non-hosting counties, I mean, it is a, as I've said on Twitter, it's a bit reductive to say they just want more, but basically both sides just want more.
Why is the clock ticking on this? Why is the value dropping? I mean, doesn't it
Well,
make
is it?
sense to make sure?
Is it? Yeah, it does. Well, that's a very, very good question. Is it dropping, or is this an attempt to chivvy the counties into compliance? Equally, is the vague threat, which I'm pretty sure was made in anger, to breakaway, also just a threat to try and push the non-hosting counties into compliance? Might well be. Both those things might be true. I don't particularly see why the market would diminish, apart from the fact that potential buyers would get irritated and possibly spooked by the sense that there's not agreement within the English and Welsh game. And there isn't, is there?
There are also questions from non-hosting counties about the future governance of the game, open bracket, once private owners are involved, close brackets, and what the consequences will be for the wider game and the schedule. That was in
Yeah.
what you sent me. That's the third from last paragraph. I would suggest that should be up, but a bit higher up in the counties.
Do you know what? If I'm honest, the email that was exchanged between the non-hosting counties and the ECB barely mentions those governance issues. Not really. It is predominantly about money. But if you talk to them, there are concerns, and there are concerns about how the competition will expand. I think at the moment it's limited to 27 days as a tournament, but I also think that limit runs out after 10 years. Now, right now, it takes 75% of the ECB membership, or the first class counties and the MCC, to push through a vote. But at the end of the year, that changes too, and I think it becomes two-thirds. So that there's an awful lot going on, and you're in danger, I know, when you go into this stuff, of losing people. So the headline is the negotiations have stalled. People are getting annoyed with one another. I think it's that simple. Is that fair, Nick?
I mean, from reading your piece this morning, that is no, it feels a very accurate summary. Yeah, I mean, as you say, it's stalling is the key thing, isn't it? This isn't the as you say, like the fundamentals are in place, and that there is broad agreement over what happens next. But it's the how you get to what happens next, the thing that is the, from my understanding, which is essentially from reading your understanding, is essentially where we are, right?
Yeah, I think so. I think so. Look, I don't have the formula for distribution, okay? So I'm not going to pretend to know something I don't. But as I understand it, it is quite complex. So the money is not split evenly. We know that the counties at the moment, sorry, the hosting counties will get 51% of the teams. So already that's not even, but you might argue it's sensible. You could argue that anyway. I don't want to get into the rights and wrongs of it. But the other 49% you might think would be split evenly between the 19. Well, it's not. 10% goes to the recreational game. And by the way, 10% of any sale that the counties make of their 51% also goes to the recreational game, with another 10% going to the 19. Does that make sense? You keep it up so far? Okay. But the rest of that 49% minus the recreational share is not split equally. There is a formula where costs are respected. I believe that contributing players to the tournament is a factor. There are quite a lot of factors, and I don't have that formula. If I did, I'd
that share. Becomes a, that last point, and as you say, it's a small sum, becomes a really interesting side issue, and presumably would have to change the shape of 100 team managements as well. I mean, if you're being paid per involvement, then presumably you can't have your head coach on the staff, or your DOC on the board, or your physio is the physio or something like that. I don't know. I mean, I think
the scope for expansion will mirror what we've just seen in the tier one sides. Okay, so the tier one game has gone from a regional, the women's
game, this is you're talking about,
cricket, but has gone from a regional model to a county model. You might argue that the 100 is going a similar direction. I would suggest that is happening. So there is another way of appeasing the counties to say, look, there is the scope for growth here. But it does mean that instead of the counties, the 100 sides being an amalgam of different counties, they're not. They're basically the hosting side. So there's a lot up for grabs. I hope I haven't given my own opinion there, because my opinion on everything we're going to talk about today is the elephant in the room, the argument that we can't have anymore. The argument that we've lost is that if you got rid of the 100, the problem wouldn't be there. But, you know, it feels facile to say it, but I just have.
Meanwhile, in the real world, Major League Cricket has unleashed. You don't unveil a fixture list anymore, you unleash it.
Do you?
And it's interesting to note that not only does it obliterate T20 Blast in terms of a clash, also eats into the first 4 or 5 days of the 100. So, you know, whilst people are sitting on their hands or avoiding the elephant in the room, you know, other leagues around the world are just getting on with it. Nick, you've just had Daryl Mitchell. PCA has been a big story this week. Joe Root's commented. I mean, it's not the first time I've heard this story, and it's, you know, if George has been across the 100 for a number of years, you've been across this story for a number of years, but essentially unwieldy schedules, you say, driving between games, asking too much of cricketers.
As one player put it to me, at the inaugural PCA meeting back in wherever it was, the 50s or 60s, they'd have sat down and discussed the schedule doesn't work, bad umpiring, and not enough money. And 65 years later, conversations haven't moved a lot. But no, so you're right, it's nothing new. It is not, you're right, it's not the first time. It is possibly the first time that the players' union has the player body has mobilised itself to to present its consensus. The consensus has existed for a very long time, but for a long time, and as you say, I've covered this extensively for the last, say, 7 months or so, and a lot of the early coverage I did of it was very anecdote based, because that was basically what there was. There's not been, so I think the really significant part of this, and everyone will look at the numbers and, you know, say, oh, 81% worried about fiscal, you know, worried about fiscal impact of the schedule, 76% concerned by driving between back-to-back matches, particularly after in the blast, that is, 62% concerned by the mental well-being, the mental impact on of the schedule. But actually, I think if you take those numbers and put them together, I think what's really significant is that these numbers exist. So I've spoken to so many players over the last few months and have heard so many similar anecdotes, some real extreme stories, some players who aren't so fussed by this, and some players, and also almost every player I've spoken to who understands how complex this is, and that this isn't the way it is out of spite. It's the way it is because there are a number of stakeholders to satisfy, you know, more than there were, but with you know, the 100 is certainly exacerbated, that's the word, an issue that certainly predates it. That is certainly worth saying. So a lot of people say this is a 100 problem. Before the 100, it was also a problem. The problem has maybe shifted, and there's, you know, there is a month that is ring fenced, but that's what I said at the start, this is not new. But say what is really significant is the hard data, just as the injury surveillance report from last year that I reported on in February was really significant as well. That put numbers of injuries to periods of the summer and highlighted what everyone already knew, that seven games in a row in the start of the championship block after a wet pre-season was not appropriate, that playing back-to-back-to-back-to-back in the T20 Blast not four in a row, but back-to-back games was not appropriate. And then those were where the injury spikes were in 2023 in the men's game. And what was really interesting is that in August, when you have cricket of the same intensity with the 100, so compare the 100 to the Blast, in terms of actual cricket on-field intensity, you've got the same product, essentially. The injury rate was much lower because you've got players being put onto team buses, playing once every 3 days rather than once every 24 hours. And it's no coincidence that there, the injuries drop off a cliff because you're being treated as elite sport. It's really tough. There isn't an obvious solution. There will be solutions, and I expect there'll be a solution that won't satisfy anyone, which probably means they'll get eventually to the right point. But I find it really interesting. And so I've written a lot about it. And I think the most important bit is that these numbers exist, not necessarily what the numbers say, but that there is, but they've been able to provide consensus in data form, because I don't know, I think that might just hit slightly harder than players talking about the risk of driving between games, or the risk of popping a hamstring on the second of two games in a row, or feeling like you're not zipping the ball through at the same pace in the fifth Champo game in 5 weeks. That's all anecdotal, but this is, you know, a bit harder than that, I think.
Okay. Shall we talk a little bit about the cricket? I was up climbing in Snowdonia, so in and out of signal. And every time I managed to get a little bit of coverage, I was checking in to the action at Taunton, where I was cheering Somerset on. I think it's been written up as a three-horse race now. Shilberry in the Telegraph saying if Essex had won, it would be a two-horse race between Essex and Surrey for the title. But could Somerset, who changed things around, didn't they? They dropped Shoaib Bashir, produced a spicy track against a good pace attack, added an extra paceman to their bowling attack, and just about got through it. Could Somerset really win the championship this year, George De Bell?
Oh, Lord, what a thing to ask me. I mean, you know, I've been a Somerset supporter since I can remember. And I love Somerset. I love the place, the team. I was going to say the hope hurts, but it doesn't really, because we don't have any. I mean, not really. And not this year. I mean, there were those years under Marcos Trescothick when, I mean, I think they finished equal on points one year, didn't they? At the top of the table. And actually, 2001, they were second. I'd be surprised if this was the year, But, you know, they've got some really good things going on there. They produce players. They've got some of the best young players in the country, you know, Ruan Lamanby, Banton. There are probably others. Bashir, obviously. There's a lot to like there. It's terribly early to be saying that it's... I mean, you know, Durham for a start. I wouldn't rule out any of them at this stage. So I wouldn't mind talking a bit more about the PCA stuff. Would that be okay?
Of course.
Well, I worry. Look, Nick's covered this brilliantly for a long time and covered it with typical sort of detail and empathy. And I think when you've got people saying they're worried about, you know, safety and health, you've got to listen. You definitely got to listen. Equally, it's different. I mean, we had a family get together over the weekend, and I talked about this stuff a little bit. And you know, some of my family are in health, and some of them are in, one of them's in policing, and you know, nurses, doctors, police sort of laugh at the idea that people have been asked to work long hours. But it's different up to a point, because you're talking about, well, you see, I said this, it's different because we're talking about a high performance environment. You know, I think doctors, police would think that they're working in a high performance environment too. You sure as hell help so when they're operating on you. I think you've got to listen and reflect and think about it. And I'm definitely very keen on that. I'm just concerned that there's a pincer operation in.
My overriding takeaway is that people don't want a radical overhaul. I think people want nuance. Sorry, what am I talking about? People want tweaks, and there's an awful lot of talk. And granted, I've written an awful lot of words over what I think essentially, if you offered the directors of cricket, the coaches, I suspect the umpires. A week, you know, if a week was found in the schedule where 7 days could be put into rest days, whether that created some kind of half-term week, whether that created 7 days before seven different games, that is the kind of thing people are after. You will not say, I was speaking to a load of players and no one comes forward and says, scrap, you know, 10 Champions games, 10 Blast games. Cricketers don't not want to play cricket, but they do want some minimum standards. And I don't think it's asking that much to want 3 days between Champa games.
Last year,
Glamorgan played two full championship games in 9 days, both away from home.
I don't think anyone should claim that the schedule as it is okay.
So that's what I mean. And essentially, I agree with what you're saying and like what you said before, but I think what is important to, what I think really is important to stress, because otherwise it becomes very simplistic and sort of quite deep-rooted argument where people are not going to change their minds. People are not asking for radical overhauls, and you've not got players going forward saying, we don't want to play cricket. We think this should go, that should go, this should go.
There is a renewal of the Strauss review arguments. Look, just to finish the point, I strongly believe that we shouldn't be trying to defend the current system. It isn't good. Mm. And it is unfortunate that the members, with the best of intentions, I think, prevented the last set of changes. It's not unfortunate that they prevented them, but it's unfortunate we stuck with a status quo that we all agree was no good.
Yeah.
So there's a couple of things. So one, I'm old and ugly enough to remember that it was the PCA, actually, who argued eventually for the 100. It was the PCA who argued for to start playing in Windows, because they said players preferred it. It was not members who said that they wanted to get rid of appointment view. It was not members who argued for the extra new competition. Okay, so just, I worry, and that Nick is definitely not doing this, but some of the argument has been framed as, again, oh, those county members who pay for everything, by the way, including our jobs, those county members, they're holding the game back. Well, I'm not sure it's that simple. And I worry that there is a pincer movement here which is designed to reduce the number of championship games to 10 a season. Now, personally, I could live with 10 a season. Personally, I could, particularly if it was in three divisions with promotion and relegation, and they're not all staged in early bloody winter. But I don't think a lot of people could live with it. And I think the issue is there's a lack of trust between people involved in the game, the membership in particular right now, and the administrators. And while I wholeheartedly and believe that we have to listen if there are warning signs like this, and we can alleviate them in some ways, you know, obviously there are Ubers and buses and stuff, but that's a sticking plaster. The schedule is not good. The stuff Nick has been bringing to our attention for a while is just ridiculous. You know, the back-to-back T20 games. The back-to-back T20 games don't work for anyone, by the way. They don't work for anyone. They don't work for spectators either. When the Morgan review came out, it said that we're asking too much of spectators financially. One of the things, and their time, you know. So
Blast Off this year, the brought in last year as the sort of the new launch pad to the T20 Blast as a way of presenting it as the showpiece competition for the counties. Birmingham Bears are playing at home on Blast Off night, which is Saturday evening, which would be great if they weren't playing away at Durham the night before.
I mean, so it's not even a start. It's not, you know, it's not an.
No, and this is where this is the, I think one of the important bits here is that this is it's much more sort of multi-pronged than to say, look, the travel stuff is stark, I think, because it's a bit like people are saying here is the warning, and this is the worst case scenario, and people are entirely right to say that, to nip it in the bud before the worst case scenario. So it's alarm, you know, people might call it alarm, you know, people might say that is. You know, we try to fear as people, but good, because that far beats having, you know, a parliamentary review into why on earth there were no standards in place that allowed things like that, you know, something like that to happen, God forbid. But think something like that blast off situation, it is, as you say, it is just, that is not player or anything, that is just bad scheduling. And I say bad is probably, it's really... Don't be critical of the guys who put their schedule together because it's bloody hard. And there is
they've got an impossible job, haven't they?
They've got an impossible job. And however you do it, it's going to look mad in some places. They have made concessions this season, for example, so that every county has a bye week in week 4, 5, or 6 of the championship. Because what was happening previously is that you had a team who'd played 7 weeks in a row, or sorry, 6 weeks in a row, playing their seventh game up against a team who just had a week off. And, you know, it doesn't take a rock scientist to know which way those games often went. So you've got guys who are knackered versus guys who are fresh. And this is a game as well. We don't have, there's not, yeah, teams can rotate. But I think in a lot of county sides that rotation does impact the strength of your side an awful lot. Essex are very strong. You know, Essex competing in the, you know, they're always doing the championship. But if you took Sam Cook and Jamie Porter out for a week and said, have a break, no disrespect to the lads coming in, but chances are you're probably looking at an Aaron Beard who's struggled with injuries a couple of years, is still young and still sort of trying to, don't know, sort of stamps authority in the same way. And then you might have someone like Jamal Richards, who's played the One Day Cup, who's played in the under-19s, but you know, he would say, he'd be the first person to say that he's not at Sam Cook's level. And so all these that you know, all these things sort, there are all kinds of sticking plasters, as George says there. But even if you do, if you go down the rotation argument, you could get relegated, but you could say at the end of the season, well, you know, all of our players are fit and well, but it's probably not going to keep your job as a head coach. So it is really complex, and there isn't a, as I said before, I suspect they'll come to a conclusion where everyone is sort of slightly disappointed. There isn't going to be a perfect answer for everyone. But I do also think, to George hit the nail on the head there, like it's easy to say the players are pushing for stuff, but I think the players are also the ones who are closest to it and can see that a title race last season was won by Surrey without playing the team that came second place a second time.
Yeah, like, right. Just as
that happened the previous year. Exactly. So it's, and then you've got August ring fence. It's really hard to, you know, look, ultimately we're having this conversation without mentioning August because it's not going to change. And it is not worth discussing things that are not going to change. It's worth discussing potential solutions and realistic solutions. What those are, I don't really know. But as I say, what is genuinely important to say, because I don't want this to become some sort of like players versus supporters thing. You've not got players sat there saying, we don't want to play cricket. You've just got players saying things like, if we're going to play a blast match at 6 p.m, or in fact, there's one case, I think, where Birmingham again, I think Birmingham play a home game at 3:30 in the afternoon, the day after playing an away game at 6 p.m. somewhere else. That is not sensible from any standpoint. And if it takes the players to come out and say that, then good on them. But they are not asking for a radical overhaul that would change everyone's viewing experience of the game over a whole summer.
There's a lot of agreement. Jake Durbat went on Twitter and slagged me off for saying it at the time, didn't he? But these are the same problems, really, that create England's difficulties when they go to India and Australia. They are. The schedule's bad.
Well, if you look, so there was a stat in the surveillance report, in the injury surveillance report, which basically documented every bit of injury data from last season that was reported through counties from essentially April through September. Now, at any one point, something like, I think it was 3%, 2.5%, 3% of players on the circuit had a stress fracture of the back. And if we take, that's every player on the circuit. If we take the back injury, if you take the stress fracture, primarily a fast bowler's injury, you can probably lose keepers, batters, spinners, albeit you get the odd spinner, I think Bethel and Jack Leach are the back problem as well. You can take a lot of players out of that, and suddenly 3% looks more like 8-9%. And suddenly you've got 1 in 10 seamer on the circuit out with a broken back. And that is not a system, that is not sustainable, that is not a system that works, that is not a system that creates any kind of proper production line of fast bowlers over a decent period of time. 1 in 10 players were out injured at all times last season. I don't know if that's a surprising number or not, but a report like that shows, as you say, that what exists currently doesn't work.
So the message to cricket supporters and members listening would be, I think, from me anyway, let's not try and preserve something that doesn't work. Let's try and find something better. Now, I think a lot of people won't be happy with the 10-game solution, I would really hope
it wouldn't come to that. I think there are ways of doing it. I mean, even if you had three divisions of six, you could still play. You could still have a 12-game season with playoffs, and that I think is what should happen.
Maybe playoffs in the English summer will worry me, but maybe. I mean, maybe that's better. You could change the numbers of teams in divisions one way or another. You know, you could add, you could subtract, possibly at a push. Anyway,
what's also saying, going back to the 100 stuff from earlier, this isn't going to be sorted imminently. This won't be for 2025, because ultimately the schedule can't go anywhere until it knows what the 100 is going to look like, because so much of this is predicated on that. And likewise with the financial side of it, once those negotiations are done, money comes back into the counties, you'd like to think that your 14-game group stage is slightly less important than it currently is. And actually, if you want to find a week spare, you could lose four Blast games, have a 10-game Blast group stage. The only competition in the world, apart from the Blast, as a 14-game Blast group stage, is the IPL. And that is because it amounts to an enormous broadcast deal. Now, the Blast doesn't do that. So if you can solve the financial issue...
It's a different model. It's a different model. I mean, it's financially still very important to the counties, as you know.
So it is, but it'd be slightly less, not less important, but it'd be less reliant.
You know what you said about the 100 isn't going anywhere? And, you know, you're probably right. You're probably right. But also a message, you know. Is this the one that Richard Gould listens to? I'm not positive it is, actually, but just...
If you're listening, Richard.
There used to be laws. You know, Normo and I grew up where everyone smoked in the pub. Yeah. And it seems unthinkable. I grew up, you didn't need seatbelts. That's why you've got such a peculiar head, no doubt. You know, things can change. Richard Gould could turn the car around. He could turn the car around. All your scheduling problems look so much easier if
Many of them do, but it is important. I think it is also important to say that these issues massively preexist. You know, they pre-exist the 100 by decades. One of the problems that cricket has with its scheduling, the English cricket has with its scheduling, is that we see, our wall chart is fantastic and iconic and all these things, but it is a mental thing to stare at because there are just blocks everywhere. There are, George, you're looking at now, I think, aren't you? Like there are no, there are, what you've got is English cricket sees a wall chart and it goes, how do we fill it? And if it sees a gap, it doesn't go, well, that is a rest day, that is a travel day.
There's a gap in the middle of May. And I guarantee it'll be sunny as all hell. And Twitter will be full of cricket doesn't help itself sometimes.
But where it also doesn't help itself with this year's schedule.
Of course it doesn't.
But particularly, uniquely for this year's actually, is that it is probably the most commercial slash fan friendly schedule you could put together in the 100 era. All the cricket is at the weekend. Champo is across Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday. Blast is Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. So you've got half. You're right. There are blocks of emptiness that are the start of the week. Because we're trying to, so people talk about packing four competitions into one summer. We're trying to pack four competitions into half a week. Well, sorry, two of those competitions half a week.
Well,
There's got to be that, that from a player perspective is a large part of the issue. Because you could actually fix a lot of these scheduling issues if you had a sensible week rather than everything in this sort of half block between Thursday and Sunday, or Monday rather.
to be fair, Nick, I didn't say at that stage, I hadn't just said the 100, I said a window.
No, you're right. You're well. I
Because
think I the sense I
there would
get.
be white ball cricket in that window anyway, because otherwise
Yeah.
it's going to be
Well,
over.
exactly. That's what I mean. So, if that, so what? Sorry, what I meant there was that if you didn't have the 100 there, English cricket would find a way of putting something else there, and
Yeah, but
very
it
quickly
would.
those
So
days
here's
would be
the
eaten up.
solution. I think so. I think the reason that I could live with 10 games, and that I think we need to think differently as cricket lovers, is that the way to grow and change is actually to appreciate that the women's game grows and changes and has become so much better to watch, so much better as a product, is developing incredibly quickly. That should be the mechanism for growth and change, I think. That so it's definitely changing, but as that comp as those competitions improve in quality, and it's so fast, then I don't think it's unreasonable to think that county members can be, in the medium term, pacified is the wrong word, entertained just slightly differently.
I know, I'm satisfied. I mean,
I
I
think
think
that's
I do genuinely, I do gen, I genuinely believe there is a, I don't think this is, this doesn't need to end with some nuclear option of radical overhaul to the schedule. And Georgia, bang on with the women's game. The women's game has been radically overhauled twice in the last 5 years. It certainly improved from the amateur county game to the regional structure. And the hope now, and it's hope to an extent, is that this tier one system, with the pyramid below, that does that again. And hopefully I can show that you can slightly adapt to the times and to the challenges. And the other challenge, James Harris said to me in an interview, sorry, as PCA chair, said to me in an interview at the end of last year, that there is a risk here. There is a reason to be concerned, and that is that you've got beyond the county game, a rapidly shifting cricket landscape, and I don't think county players learn as much as some people might think. But there are more and more franchise competitions that aren't necessarily for the top bracket player. And if you decide that you can earn your 60, 70, 80 grand a year in much smaller chunks in warmer parts of the world, in a way that is better on your mind and your body, the game does risk losing players from it. As we've already sort of started to see with these like half blast deals at Surrey and Alex Hales, the lag of Premier League, and the increase in just white ball deals in general. So I don't know how close that is, or if that's a worst case scenario, but there is a wider, that like it'd be lovely to just be able to focus on county cricket and say this is, we'll do it exists our way. But you do, there does need to be some, as John touched on with MLC this year. That's expanded. That's taken, that's a new challenge. There does need to be a bit of sort of awareness of, that this is also that any changes do come with, sort of preserving the county game in mind up against what exists on the outside.
Yeah, look, I think that's so much better and more nuanced a discussion that has been had some other places. I don't want it to see it as county members resisting change because I see a lot of love and care for the game. And actually, I think they finance it. If you break down who are paying the subscriptions for the broadcasters, who are buying magazine subscriptions, who are buying digital
Digital
subscriptions,
subscriptions,
I'm sure it's overwhelmingly county members. But there are cricket lovers way beyond members, and I think there's some wisdom in listening to that as well. You'd be a fool not to listen to the players, obviously.
Can we talk about Lancashire?
Yeah.
I mean, we've been going for nearly an hour. Can I just say the May issue of, if you're talking about the love and care for the game of cricket, check out the May issue of The Cricketer. It's out now, celebrates the return of county cricket. Top coverage from all 18 counties, from the award-winning team of writers every issue, your perfect companion for the summer and beyond. And to save 37% off the cover price, subscribe now at thecricketer.com/subscribe. Yeah, we are running a little bit late now, guys. But yeah, what is going on at Lancashire? I think the Sky team headed to Old Trafford for the weekend. So full comms, of course, Mike Atherton, part of that, former Lancashire player. And they went down to a punishing defeat against Kent. Daniel Bell Drummond seeing his side home. But is there cause for real concern there? Or, as George said earlier, he's not writing them off for the title just yet.
Nick, he's definitely asking you.
Is he asking me? I mean, you'd have to... I mean, there's definitely cause for concern, isn't there? I mean, they look a better light a lot of the time. Obviously, got a couple of young players there, George Bell and Matthew Hurst. Tom Bruce, the DOC's player for New Zealand, hasn't got going yet. So it feels like they're quite reliant on that top three of Jennings, Wales and Bohannon. I mean, there are far worse top threes and guys going to be reliant on. But, you know, I guess it'd be a fair bit of upheaval of starting the change of coach, then bring Nathan Lyon in, then Nathan Lyon's plans being slightly changed by Cricket Australia. So there's sort of, you know, that seemed to take up a fair bit of the chat in pre-season, didn't it? And then, yeah, I mean, you know, I sort of chatted a lot with Dale Benkenstein in his 2 years at Gloucestershire, and I think he's now gone something like, well, he didn't win a game last year, and their last Red Bull win was in September 2022. I mean, there were mitigating circumstances then, and I suspect there are now, but I think it must be really tough for him, because he is, as Harmy has said a lot on this podcast, he's a winner. He's, you know, idolised at Durham as the guy who, you know, who won the title and who brought an enormous culture change to the club. And when he got the Lancashire job, sorry, it surprised a lot of people, he'd actually been the batting coach there for a short stint a couple of years beforehand. I thought he'd do very well. I'm still fairly sure that he will. But there's obviously, as I know, I mean, as I say, I looked down there, said first, it looks like a side that's a better light. And they've got a squad of guys who aren't available. I mean, Saqib's not played yet this season. Obviously, Jimmy Anderson not played yet this season. And they've got this slightly awkward thing with Nathan Lyon, the games he can play. And yeah, so they've got second over season Tom Bruce, who's not really scored a run yet. But it wasn't long ago they were battling for the title. When did they win it? Got this, am I going mad? I feel like they did they win it, or did they, sorry, they certainly competed.
They won it in 2011, is that, that's
yeah,
not
they,
what you
sorry, not win it. They competed for it rather in the last few years. Not the last couple, but before that. I mean, then it's not broadly you know, you've got guys like Tom Bailey who are part of that, and someone like Will Williams, who's coming from New Zealand, is a very good county seamer. And Josh Bohannon, who I don't think is far away from England, and Keaton Jennings, who I think is one of those, who I think is a really, really good player who could still over the back for England again. And Luke Wells, likewise, who's scored a load of runs in county cricket over the years. They're not a bad side, but they, you wouldn't say they're playing particularly well at the moment.
They're not a bad side, and it's May 7th. You know, so I think people need to, yeah. I mean, good sides do get relegated, but we're not there yet. The other thing it reminds us is that there's talent in the smaller counties. Maybe it's quite a nice, eloquent statement from a smaller county to make right now, particularly as Kent have one of the most exciting young players in England in this. Well, he's not in their side. So Jaden Denley, who I think is he 18 now? He's real young and really promising. And, you know, what they've done here is a reminder of how much talent there is spread beyond the 800 hosting sides. And that, you know, we're all better if they're all flourishing, because they'll produce players and they'll produce people who are more cricket lovers. They should be they should be centres of excellence in their own communities, reaching out in every way that cricket clubs should be reaching out, being relevant, inspiring people to play, get better, come and watch cricket. So in the grand scheme of things, I don't think it's so bad that a club that's had a couple of setbacks recently.
They've only lost twice. They've drawn, they had a washout, they basically washed out against Surrey, Lancashire. They've lost twice. They've had two draws. Like you say, we're not even the way through. It's May the 7th. Kent are fascinating. I think that's a really good win for them because they are having their annual sort of chaotic overseas carnage of happened last year to them where they thought they'd sort of agreed deals about six overseas seamers before one actually turned up fit and ready to go. And they've had similar this time. They thought they'd cracked it. Got Wes Agar back, who is here, and they got Xavier Bartlett on the back of a brilliant Big Bash, who was probably withdrawn by Cricket Australia, and they've sort of managed to get him back for a bit of the blast. And they've basically gone round the house ever since. They've now got four guys registered, because they've got Bartlett, Wes Agar, they've replaced Bartlett for the championship with a guy, with a South African called Beyers Swanepoel, I want to say. And now a guy called Charlie Stobo, who is a Western Australia seamer. They are a great example. They're a great example of how chaotic it is to bring overseas to actually successfully sign overseas players in this day and age. And sort of goes back to what we were talking about before with the schedule and how many opportunities there are for players. It is really hard. And I think they won at Lancashire with just Agar of the four overseas players playing. So at their pre-season press conference, they sort of said that they hoped that they'd cracked all the issues of last year, and it would appear that they've stumbled across some new ones as well.
A classy win for Matt Parkinson as well. I mean, I think he took the wicket, didn't he? Again, a very eloquent way of making a point against the club, which found him superfluous.
Yeah, but it's early May, but cool to see Parkinson, Lyon, Hartley all playing. I wasn't in England over the weekend, but I can't imagine it was war. So, good to see. And, and if Matt Parkinson can have a good year, if Matt Parkinson can have a good year again, it'd just be really lovely to see, because he had a bit of a tough one last year. Ended up at Durham, had a couple of tough years with the England stuff 2 summers ago now. But he's a lovely bowler to watch, whether or not he's
Mason Crane getting a fifer. It's lovely to see. Even if it happens against your side, it's kind of great to be youngish.
Absolutely.
Well, getting the chance to bowl and flourishing. So that's something to kind of celebrate. Mason Crane, I mean, look at his career trajectory. Easy for me to say. And he hasn't really had any opportunity, has he, between selection issues and stress fractures. So just on a really basic level, it's really nice to see people get an opportunity.
And also, good on him, because he's made a real point of wanting to get out and play. You know, Hampshire, a very good county that he could, his home county, and he could very easily have, kept on waiting for his opportunity and sticking around behind Dawson, and they've got Felix Organ and off-spin as well. And they've got a very good seam attack, but they've sort of helped him, also limited opportunities. But fair play for essentially, of course, get himself out on loan, playing games. George, you've said many times before on here that he's sort of a barometer player for the circuit. And if you can't find space,
we first started this podcast, I think it was 2 years ago. Yeah, was it 2 years ago, Norma?
Yeah,
jeez, back for a third season. Who would have thought? A tricky third season. I picked him as my player to watch in the season, and then unless you're watching second 11 cricket, you didn't really see it. But it is true that if players like him are playing, I think it's quite a good sign. I think it suggests you're playing on good wickets. I think it suggests that talent's getting an opportunity, and the sort of talent that could potentially shape Test cricket, wrist spin. And I think it is good for the English game that bowlers like that are getting a chance. And we just mentioned two, as I say, youngish leg spinners with a tiny taste of international cricket. But they could have 10 years or more ahead of them. And they are the sort of players who could make a difference on flat wickets, potentially.
We're going to...
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
The Following On podcast is proudly sponsored by Barbados Tourism. If your passion for travel is on par with your passion for cricket, then I have some excellent news. The ICC Men's Cricket T20 World Cup final is being hosted in Barbados this June, which makes it the perfect destination for your summer holidays this year. To make the most of your trip, you can also experience 8 matches from the series in Barbados, including England against Scotland and England against Australia. In under a month's time, you could be spending your days exploring the vibrant streets of Bridgetown, drinking rum in the sunshine and experiencing exotic Bajan delicacies in the culinary capital of the Caribbean. There truly is something for everyone. There's no need to wait a second longer. Head to visitbarbados.org/cricket today to book the trip of a lifetime to Barbados, truly the best place to be a cricket fan.
Wrap things up, guys, but you talk about counties showing the strength outside of the test circuit or the haves against have-nots. Sussex, top of Division 2. How excited are you about watching Jaden Sills bowl this summer? Because I was fortunate enough to be with Joel Garner last week, who flew over as part of a tourism deal with Barbados Tourism. Sat and talked to him for 45 minutes or so. And, of course, some of the names of the great... the good West Indies bowlers that used to frequent our game 20, 30 years ago. But Jaden Sills, 5 for against Derbyshire. We know what he did against Australia, of course, famously for West Indies. He's going to be part of that team later this year. Jason Holder's over here as well. I'm really looking forward to seeing him bowl.
He is. Jaden Sills. Mm. He's bloody brilliant.
Enough
he's fantastic. Fantastic to watch.
And a nice tie-in with the whole, because I grew up watching Joel, well, occasionally, at Somerset. I mean, you know, for all history, is amazing how it remembers things differently. I think, I don't know how many seasons Joel played. I think he got 50 wickets once for Somerset, in the days when people used to get 100. So, I mean, the number of times he'd turn up and he would be replaced by someone like Colin Dredge or Dennis Brakewell, because he'd had a late injury. Was incredible, but it was quite a sight. But I think I'm right in saying that the last season that he and Viv were at Somerset, they were 17th, which was bottom at the time before Durham. So, Somerset supporters have put up with a lot over the years. And a few of us always exchange messages at the start of the season. So, such as Fraser at the MCC, he's a Somerset supporter. In fact, I think he played at the second 11 with Marcus Trescothick. Always say this is the year, but I don't think any of us did think that this would be the year. I wouldn't even know how to react. But, honestly, it would be, I think I'd rather it happen than almost anything else in the world. I mean, I try and wear my Somerset love pretty. I try to disguise it, but it is... abiding. It's what I tell to people who are depressed. Go to Taunton for a day or go watch cricket there. You definitely don't want to just go to Taunton for the day. You definitely got to involve cricket in it. I wouldn't go otherwise.
Yeah, the writer Ian Ridley said it was county cricket that helped him get over the death of his wife, didn't he? Just being able to sit there and watch cricket. And
yeah, but much as I love going to Edgbaston, you wouldn't want to do it at a county game at Edgbaston. Oh, sorry, a championship game at Edgbaston doesn't do the same things to you as a championship game at Taunton. it's, it feels as if it matters. It feels as if you're part of the community. It feels as if there's a connection there. And Edgbaston, brilliant stadium that it is, can feel a little bit soulless on a day of championship cricket.
Anything else that we want to discuss, guys? We've covered quite a few different aspects to the game. There aren't actually as many games taking place this week, but Surrey are back in action against Warwickshire. Essex will probably feel like they've missed out an opportunity there. We haven't talked about Yorkshire, who once again were thwarted in their attempt to get off the mark in terms of a win. They're yet to win a game in five attempts. They actually play Sussex next, I think. But yeah, is there anything else that we want to discuss?
Well, I'd like to know where Nick's going this weekend.
Come on, Nick, tell us.
That's a good question. I think
well, I'll be probably look at a rota, but I don't know how these things work.
I reckon I want to say that I'm at the. I can see with the Google, but I'm not by the way. I might well be at Canterbury for where Kent are playing Worcestershire on certainly Sunday, Monday.
Who's at the Oval, Nick? Am I at the Oval?
Paul Edwards is at the Oval.
Definitely not going to tread on Mr. Edwards' toes.
Apparently I'm at.
I love the fact that we use this show as a mechanism to find out where you two are going to be spending your working weekends.
No one's listening now, Norbo. No one's listening to this.
If you're still listening now, you are exactly the kind of person we should ask to leave a 5-star review on the podcast feed.
Not even Richard Gould, yeah? Because he heard the bit earlier and he screamed his car to a halt on the M25, turned it around, not literally.
I'm assuming you'd stop recording.
Driving back to Lourdes to say, no, the 100's got to go. He's been inspired. He's come to his senses.
Well, you heard it here first.
Well, on that note.
On that note, you're at Lourdes this weekend, George. Guys, thank you for your time. We will be back next week. Harmy will be with us as well. I can't remember where Harmy was today. I think he's playing golf somewhere. Either way, he'll be back. So will I. But for now, thanks so much for listening. If you listen this far, please let us know. Drop us a message on Twitter. Just one person. If you're listening now.
The last 5 minutes were spent.
Call the police. Tell us you need to call the police without telling us you need us to call the police.
The last 5 minutes was genuinely people listening to two people look at a rota.
I don't know how to open the rota.
They said it would never work.
On that, I've lost my scarf. I like it very much. If anyone's seen it.
What does really it look like?
It's grey.
I don't know. Somerset? Is it Somerset written on it?
No, it doesn't. I've got a Somerset umbrella. It's pathetic, isn't it? I've got Somerset playing cards. I love Somerset. I mean, I think the plan is that when I die, I'm sprinkled at Taunton. Is that the right word? Sprinkled? it's a big, weird thing. And when you talk about them winning the championship, it makes me feel weird.
Right, but that's the end of the show. See you next week. You've been listening to County Cricketer. End of. Drop
loosely.
That's it.
I always feel weird. You know that.
We're still recording.
The Following On podcast is proudly sponsored by Barbados Tourism, and this is your gentle reminder that Barbados is the best place to be a cricket fan. With 8 matches from the ICC Men's T20 Cricket World Cup Series taking place in Barbados this summer, including the final, you can experience the summer of a lifetime by booking today. Aside from immersing in world-class cricket in the sunshine, Barbados is the dream destination for all travel enthusiasts. It is where adventure meets paradise, the culinary capital of the Caribbean, and better still, the birthplace of rum. if you're keen to unite with cricket fans across the globe for what is set to be an unforgettable summer, then head to visitbarbados.org/cricket today.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.